Welcome to the AT Tips Cast, exploring and investigating the implementation of assistive technology in public schools. I'm your host, Chris Bouguet. This is episode number 37, recorded on June 23rd, 2009. This episode features the first of a two-part interview with Chris Cummins, who is currently a high school English teacher in East Aurora, New York, as well as an adjunct professor at the State University of New York at Fredonia, teaching a class on literacy and technology. During this first part of the interview, Chris and I discuss different types of graphic organizers, why to use them, and how to implement them in a high school setting. The second part of the interview, which will be in the next episode, focuses more on specific tools that can be used to create graphic organizers, while also touching upon some ideas about implementing graphic organizers across the curriculum. You might notice a bit of an echo during some of the audio. I tried my best to limit the amount of echo, but it's still in there in some sections. Morris O'Brien, I'm not. I did my best. I hope you don't find it too distracting. Embedded within this episode are AT tip numbers 51, 52, and 53, which correspond to the different styles of graphic organizer mentioned in this episode. I'll have all that listed, plus examples of each, over at the blog site attipscast.wordpress.com. So I'd like to welcome to the show today Chris Cummins, who is, Chris, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I would be glad to. I am a, I guess I'm an English teacher at a high school in New York, and I am also an adjunct college professor at a college in New York, SUNY Fredonia, as well as East Aurora High School. And I teach, right now I teach the upper grades, 11 and 12, but I've actually taught 7 through 12, and I currently teach a literacy and technology class at SUNY Fredonia.
So do you teach that like every semester, or when does that happen?
Well, I've been teaching the SUNY Fredonia class for approximately 6 years, and I do teach it every semester. And in terms of high school, I've bounced around a bit from North Carolina to Corning, New York, to North Tonawanda, and now to East Aurora. And I've been lucky enough to be in city schools, suburban schools, rural schools. So I have a decent taste for variety there.
Yeah, that's great. So you have like a pretty diverse background there. Just to help people out, when you say you're in New York, I think people might get the impression that you're in New York State, but not New York City, right? East Aurora is where in relation to, let's say, New York City?
Good point. We do not have skyscrapers in East Aurora. East Aurora is a it's a suburb of Buffalo, and it is a middle to upper middle class suburb, and primarily white. It's kind of the John Mellencamp small town atmosphere.
I've invited you here today on the show to talk a little bit about graphic organizers, since you have such a diverse experience working with literacy in all the different grade levels, and in the upper grade levels and in the college atmosphere. So, why use a graphic organizer? Do you use graphic organizers at all? If so, why? Why not? How does it work for you?
Well, I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't, because I fully believe in them. And I think the main reason I believe in graphic organizers is more based on brain research. We learn, most of the research that I've done states that the brain categorizes information, it chunks information, it stores information, but it does so in a very organized way, believe it or not. And so when information or concepts are, when they enter the brain in an organized fashion, it's easier for the brain to conceptualize and then put them in the right place for retrieval.
You know, I kind of think of that like when I would study for an exam in college, I would kind of remember where something was on the page. You know, if I had to remember some sort of fact and spill it back out on the test, I'd remember that it was like in the top third of the page or the bottom third of the page, or I crammed that into the margin over here, you know, and I could visually bring it up in my brain.
That's a great example, because it is, again, you know, you're organizing information visually. I wish I would do that. I would have done that when I was in high school and college. I was the fool who read over my notes and thought that I studied, and then realized I have no idea what to write for this essay or how to answer this question.
How do you implement them? How do you implement a graphic organizer to students in high school?
Well, that's a great question, because at first high school students really feel that drawing or putting words in boxes is beneath them, and they feel that it's gimmicky. It's a waste of their time. So often I have to use a little bit of humor, but more so I have to model, and then I have to allow them to use the graphic organizers when they're actually completing a task, even taking a test, so they can see how it functions. So I start off slowly. I start off usually when I do kind of the rudimentary aspects of English, such as vocabulary. That's where I'll start to put the graphic organizers in place and explain how they're used and why they're used. And from there, we'll branch out into longer, more in-depth pieces like essay writing or analysis of a character or a plot of some sort of literature. It's not an easy sell to the older kids.
Because they're thinking, oh, that's so middle school, or I did that in fifth grade, I don't want to use that now.
Absolutely.
So when you're, like you said, if you're starting off with vocabulary, what type of graphic organizer do you use? Is there a certain model that you like?
There are a couple that I like to use a lot. The first one is an older one. It's called a Frayer model. And it uses just the concept of a square to break down a word or a concept. So in the upper left-hand side, it has the essential characteristics, and then the upper right is the non-essential. And what I mean by that is the essential characteristics are what define the word. The non-essential characteristics are more generalized terms that people use when talking about it, but they really are not related to the specific word. And then on the bottom, on the left and right, we might have examples and non-examples. And the students will be able to fill in the square, or actually the four squares, with the word in the center, and they begin to internalize these essential characteristics and these non-essential characteristics. So when they have to use the word, they're actually thinking of it in terms of contrast. And so they'll know when it fits with a certain context and when it won't, based on those essential and non-essential characteristics.
That's awesome. And plus, since it's visually organized, they can also, like I said, kind of close their eyes and picture, okay, that helps me by knowing that this is in the bottom right-hand quadrant, you know?
Yep, exactly. Another one that I like to use is called it has a bunch of words. Some people call it semantic mapping. Some people call it the super word web, which probably is a vestige of elementary school or middle school. I can imagine some sort of caped crusader coming out saying, here is your vocabulary word for the day. Use it healthy. Use it well. This super word web deals with the same idea of placing descriptors of a word in various places. So the word usually goes in the center. And then on the upper right is a description or are a few words that are, I guess, emotive or aesthetic in nature. So they have to do with emotions. So they're kind of like the emotional connotations of the word. And they float around in the upper right there. But then directly attached to it on the bottom, the word that is a concrete definition or a concrete sentence. And what the hope is that the students are going to remember the definition, but they're really only going to understand the word if they consider these other connotations or the emotive qualities of the word. And of course, since the emotive qualities of the word are kind of floating around up there, they also realize that I can't use the emotive qualities to define the word. I have to use the ones directly attached to the word.
So those were both for like vocabulary. So that's like maybe how you'd start off introducing graphic organizers. It's towards the beginning of the year, but now as writing continues and you're working on, generating essays or something like that, do you switch and use a different model?
Yeah, they actually just, I would say probably, well, I was going to say that they become more complex, but that might not necessarily be true. But one I do use that is more complex is called a comparison contrast matrix. And this one is basically a chart. But what we do is we take the concepts we want to work with and we make columns, and then for each column, we may add a category or we might add a qualifier. So if you were looking at this, the first column might be a column of characters from a book. Then columns 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on are possible character traits, or perhaps they are thematic relations to the novel. And we can either write notes in all of the boxes, or we can put little check marks to identify whether a character aligns with it. So the students can fill in this chart, and then they can overtly see which characters are more relevant to certain themes. They can see which characters maybe better address a certain essay question if they were taking a state exam or even an AP or other exam. And so it becomes easy for them to visualize in their head which characters they need to use, which characters they need to kind of access more quickly than other characters.
So in that way, I mean, really, that's not even a writing exercise for them. I mean, that's just a way of analyzing a piece of text, or in this case, a novel.
You're absolutely right. I suppose it could be used for history, sciences, anything.
I mean, it's graphic organizers not for writing, which is what most people think of when they think of graphic organizers, but it's for any part of the curriculum.
Yeah, I guess really, graphic organizing is simply for thinking.
Right, right. I think would you agree that maybe a lot of people think of graphic organizers as something just for writing, and it's kind of a language art sort of centric concept?
I would, but there are, I guess with a qualification, I consider the sciences, and in many ways they are using graphic organizers too. You know, the organizers that deal with processes are often science related, but they can also be English related too, because an essay, of course, is process.
And that was the first part of the interview. The next episode of the AT Tips Cast will feature the second and final part of the interview, where we discuss some specific tools, most of which are free, for creating graphic organizers. Drop me a line and let me know what you thought of the interview. I'll pass the feedback on to Chris as well. You can contact me via email at attipscast@gmail.com. Also, you can look up the AT Tippers group on Facebook and Classroom 2.0 and leave me a message there. And just a quick reminder that I'll be at the National Educational Computing Conference, or NEC, 2009, which is happening in Washington, D.C. starting on June 28th. I'll be doing a poster session there with Sally Norton Darr called Chew the Fat, Policies and How-Tos in Assistive Technology. If you're going to NEC and you can swing by, I'd love to meet you. So, until next time, may all your interventions be inclusive, may all your strategies be supportive, and may all your thoughts be graphically organized.